From SGI USA, I'm Cassidy Bradford, and this is Buddhability, the weekly series where I talk with Buddhists from all walks of life about the power we each have to change our lives and the world around us. Embracing ourselves and other people, just as we are, is foundational to Buddhism. But it can be hard. Buddhism teaches us that all people possess the infinitely precious Buddha nature, or this potential for enlightenment. And all we need to do to tap into it is to chant Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. At the heart of everything, we're valuable and wonderful just as we are. We don't need to become someone else in order to be worthy or to have value. This week we asked you, what do you want to embrace about yourself or someone else? Lots of you want to learn to be okay with making mistakes. Nobody's perfect, and often what might seem like a mistake are actually important stepping stones for our growth. Many of you want to embrace what makes you unique. Sometimes we can feel like different equals bad. It's natural to want to be liked and accepted by others. But when we can truly embrace every part of who we are, just as we are, we can live a life unswayed by the opinions of others. Today's episode is about the path to self-acceptance and love. I'm speaking with Joshua Thomas of Portland, Oregon, about how he used his Buddhist practice to embrace his identity and share that message with others. We have a content note about today's episode. There are several mentions of suicide, and while we don't dive deep into the details, please take care when listening. Or hold off until next week if you know this content isn't a good fit for you.
My name is Joshua Thomas. My pronouns are he, him, his. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I work for the Oregon Food Bank as their equity and work culture manager, and I'm 32 years old.
I think your story is just really wonderful and super encouraging. So thank you for joining me today. I know, you know, we'll talk about many things in your experience, but your upbringing in particular had a big impact on who you are. So I think it would be great to just start out with a little bit about your life growing up and maybe how it led you to seek out Buddhism.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the podcast and to be able to talk about my journey. And yeah, I'm from Galesburg, Illinois, which is a small rural town, and it was a pretty predominantly white and conservative community, and I personally grew up in a Christian and Seventh-day Adventist family. Growing up, I really grappled with my identities and coming into my racial identity and identifying as Black in a predominantly white city. A lot of friends' parents were kind of wary of me, you know, just because of my racial identity. And, you know, my friends would always say things like, Joshua's like the whitest Black person you would ever meet, or he's a white man trapped in a Black man's body, and all this messaging, like, I kind of started to internalize as like a way of being accepted. And then also coming into my identity as being gay in the church, I learned that if you're gay, you're essentially automatically condemned to hell. And so for me, like as a 7-year-old, that brought about a lot of suffering, you know, for me. And that kind of like made me, you know, realize like at a young age that I wasn't worthy or capable of being happy based on what society was telling me. And so I kind of felt like I had to discard my identities as a way of fitting in. And, you know, with that, like I didn't have a strong sense of self. But I really loved everyone like in my community and my environment. And so I was always working like for the happiness of other people. And it really helped me with being able to make like a lot of like friends, but just really feel like I wasn't able to be true to myself. And whenever I was around my friends, like I was happy and outgoing, but at home, you know, I suffered silently. A lot of people didn't really know like what I was like internally going through. And when I went to college, that's when I worked up the courage like to come out as gay, but still had a lot of like internalized heterosexism and some anti-like Blackness as well. Heterosexism essentially means like dominant culture's way of articulating the dominant gender roles that we're all are supposed to like assimilate to. And with that, like, it kind of encompasses like what we deem as like homophobia, like this fear of like of being gay, or that being gay is like wrong. And then anti like blackness is just internalized hatred towards black folks. And I've experienced that within myself, because that's like in society, like it was like modeled to me that like black people can't be trusted, or like they're uneducated. And so all of these like illusions like that kind of like circulate within society. And so those came up like within my own life, where like I started to like to believe those things like about myself, and then also like about like the black community. And so it even like interrupted my engagement like with other black peers, of me not wanting to be perceived as the stereotypical like black person, and with my internalized heterosexism, like not want to be perceived as the stereotypical like gay person. And so that led me to like disconnect from these communities so I could be accepted like by dominant culture, or what they believe is like the correct way to live or the correct way to be. But I, you know, started to date, and, you know, the first person I dated ended up being a very, you know, toxic relationship, which I try to move away from saying toxic, but we just both weren't at a place where we were able to be our best selves and kind of just like act it out on, you know, some of our own personal like traumas. You know, that led to my senior year. In a heat of an argument, I ended up attempting suicide, and I ran into traffic and got hit by a car. And waking up in the hospital the next day, you know, I realized that like something like fundamentally in my life like needed to change. And so that led me to move to Portland, Oregon, where my aunt lives, to kind of start over, like just get away. And just thought that like having a blank slate in a new city where I didn't really know a lot of people was like the best thing for my life, to like to essentially reinvent myself. It's like kind of what I was thinking. And I soon realized that like moving away doesn't change your circumstances. They just kind of follow you wherever you go, because they're so deeply internalized. And I was nervous that I would like end up like recommitting, because the same like tendencies and people that I surrounded myself with in college were kind of like manifesting within my environment, like within Portland. And I also just felt like I was shrinking. I was just getting smaller and smaller, and I just knew that not to be, you know, myself. And so with that, like, I just really kept asking myself, like, what do I do to overcome, like, this deep internal suffering that I was feeling? And the first thing that came to mind was to go on a spiritual journey. And at first, I'm just like, what the heck? You know, does that mean, like, religion was like the root of my suffering as a kid? And to think about then turning to religion to help me like during this time, like my mind could not comprehend it. But I really just intuitively knew that I needed to listen, you know, to myself. And so I started seeking. And at that time, a close friend of mine, their stepmom, invited me to this meditation group. And so I started going there and really loved the community, but didn't feel like I was experiencing the breakthroughs that I was looking for. And so I kind of like fundamentally just knew that it wasn't it, but I kept seeking. And during that time, I started working at the Oregon Food Bank as their network and compliance coordinator, which is equivalent to a health inspector. And so I'll go to our partner agencies and make sure that they are following all food safety regulations and that they're not violating anyone's civil rights. A lot of our partner agencies are at churches. And so one of my colleagues was like showing me like how to do these visits. And that particular day, we went to three churches and we're like getting ready to go into our next visit. And I just had this thought, just ask her if she's religious. And so like, okay, hey, out of curiosity, are you religious? And she goes, I'm a Nietzschean Buddhist. And the light bulb just kind of like went off in my head. And I was just like, tell me all about it. I'm just so curious. So we ended up going to lunch, and she introduced me to the Soka Gakkai International, which is a lay Buddhist community that promotes peace, culture, and education centered on respect for the dignity of life. And during that conversation, you know, she shared with me that they chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. And I was just like, I never heard of like chanting before. I always like thought of Buddhism like with meditation. And so I was just really intrigued. And so the next day she gave me The Living Buddhism and The World Tribune, which are publication subscriptions. And so she gave me some of those publications, like started reading about the practice and felt connected. And so luckily, a couple weeks later, she invited me to a discussion meeting, which are the SGI central activities where small gatherings of members and guests within a local neighborhood come together at a member's house to share experiences, study Buddhism, and encourage others to experience indestructible happiness. And I was just like, great, yes, like, I want to go. And at the same time was like nervous. And I was like really asking myself, you know, how are they going to perceive me as a gay Black person? And as soon as I walked in the house, the person hosting the meeting was Black and a lesbian. And in that moment, just completely squashed like all of my doubts. And so, yeah, so that's how I came into the practice.
Wow. I think it's amazing that you got to this point that you were like, oh, I think I need to like find something, especially coming from, like you said, this experience growing up that a lot of religious viewpoints maybe like caused you a lot of harm, and to like have this moment of like, but actually maybe there is something more in this world that like I want to seek out. I'm wondering, you had mentioned that when you were trying out the meditation kind of practice, you weren't seeing the breakthroughs that you were looking for. And I'm wondering, like, yeah, what were you looking for in terms of like religion or a spiritual practice? And like, what kind of breakthroughs did you want to see?
Yeah, like at that time, I felt really voiceless. Like I just lost connection to like my authentic voice and expression, because it was just two of my core identities. Like I really felt like that I had to rid myself of in order to fit in through society. And so I was like looking for something to really empower me to be able to start that journey of like reclaiming my identities. And I felt like with meditation, like I would be sitting in the room and wondering like, am I meditating? Is this it? And I could never get myself to like do it by myself at home. So that I would only do it like when I was like with the community. And even then, couldn't figure out if I was actually experiencing it or not. And so for me, it just didn't really resonate or really click.
Yeah, totally. I think it's also fascinating to me that you could move from like really kind of conservative part of the country to a place that is supposedly, you know, like quite progressive. And even there, you were battling with this like inability to just really live authentically. And I think that speaks to, like you said, this internal struggle is always in our life, no matter what the external environment might look like. So I think that's really, yeah, very fascinating to me. So when you get to the, you know, local meeting and immediately feel like, oh, okay, well, there's somebody that maybe shares some identities with me here. maybe I don't have to be totally like, you know, too nervous or like too worried about feeling accepted. What was that meeting like?
Yeah, they really assured me that like everyone without exception possesses the Buddha nature, which is unlimited wisdom, courage, and compassion, and all can obtain happiness in this lifetime, like regardless of their race and gender and sexual orientation, and that through chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, you can polish the mirror of your life and start to see your authentic self more clearly. And that was like the language that I was like looking for in the tool. And it just like really helped me articulate kind of how I was like feeling internally and what I was like really looking for in my life. And I was just so excited just to hear that I can really step in like a community and like be fully embraced. And that I can start this journey of finding out like who I truly am, like knowing that I had this like community rallying around me to help support me in that. And I felt like it was something that I've never experienced before. And I could just instantly like feel it, like as soon as I like walked into the space. And I just had so much like gratitude, like for my colleague for introducing me to this wonderful community and to chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like in that moment, like, oh, wow, okay, this is like definitely what I've been searching for. So after that, were you like, okay, I'm all in, I'm chanting every day, I'm a full-time Buddhist, or like what happened?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a journey. And so a few like weeks later, like she invited me to the New Year's World Peace Prayer at the SGI Cultural Center. These are monthly meetings where local neighborhoods come together to strengthen the bonds of community and encourage each other to work towards the shared goal of creating a peaceful, harmonious world through sharing Nichiren Buddhism ideals. And when I walked into the center, I just felt completely embraced, like, by everyone. And at that time, like, I really felt invisibilized in Portland. I felt like there were so many different encounters that I had with people where I just wasn't acknowledged. Or, like, people on the bus wouldn't want to, like, sit next to me or even, like, at Starbucks. And for me, it was, like, really apparent because even when I would, like, get off the bus or if I would leave or another spot would open up, people would go sit at those other seats. So it was, like, really apparent to me that, like, they were avoiding me. And that really had an impact on my mental health. And so when I like walked into this community and everyone like completely just embraced me, like walked up, asked me like, hey, what's your name? Like, what brings you here? Or we're so happy like that you're here. And I'm just thinking, they don't even know me, but they're like just so happy like by my presence. So it's just like, this is great. And the meeting was like amazing, like the faith experience that really touched and resonated with me. And that's when I got introduced to Daisaku Ikeda, like through videos. Daisaku Ikeda is one of the three founding presidents of the Soka Gakkai International. He has studied the Lotus Sutra and all of like Nichiren's writings and have been able to put them into modern times. And so that we can really understand this Buddhism and with just the things that are like happening, you know, in the world right now. And through his life and his like efforts to promote peace and culture and education has like truly demonstrated how we can apply these Buddhist principles and concepts like to our lives and to be able to break through and become happy and to then be able to encourage like those around us. And I could just really feel the humanistic principles and values just emanating like through all the people. And that just further like made me realize that, yes, like this is like a community that I want to be a part of as I undergo this inner transformation, which I later like learned means doing our human revolution. You know, although I had like such an incredible opportunity to go to this meeting and really connected, I didn't go to any other, you know, meetings or like activities, but I started chanting like on my own for the next like 4 to 5 months. And I was like learning about the practice, but wasn't attending, you know, any activities. And during that time, all of these amazing things like were happening, like I was like getting raises. I was only there for like less than a year. So the fact that I was like getting raises, like already, I was just like, this is not heard of. Like, this like must be the effect like of me, you know, chanting. And especially during that time, you know, I was like chanting about financial security. I was chanting about like reclaiming my identity. And so all these wonderful things were happening. And then at the same time, some of these not so great things were happening. And so I found myself in another relationship. And my partner's outbursts like would trigger my trauma from my relationship in college. So I was like really reverting like back to these unhealthy like coping mechanisms. And so, you know, desperately like wanting to get to the root of my suffering, like I started asking myself, what do I need to do to fundamentally like break through this? And the first thing that came to mind was to really commit, like, to being a Nichiren Buddhist, like, with the Soka Gakkai. At that moment, I didn't know what to do, like, to begin that journey. And so I'm, like, frantically, like, online, like, how do I receive that paper thing? And later reached out, like, to my coworker, who then her and two other women came to my house and they started to share with me, you know, more about their experiences, like with the practice. And it just really, you know, further assured me that, like, yes, I will be able to overcome, you know, my suffering, like through chanting Nam-myo Renge-kyo. It was just like, yes, like I really want to do this. And so I was able to receive my own Gohanzon, which I learned is the paper thing that I was like referring to. It's called the
What is this scroll? Yeah.
Which is the mandala, in which it's a scroll, you know, that we chant to. I was told that it is like a mirror. And when you first start chanting to it, like you can't really see yourself like very clearly. But once you start chanting Nam-myo Renge-kyo, you are starting to polish that mirror and you're starting to see like yourself more clearly. And so like with that, like, you know, I was told it's just like you're processing your inner workings, your inner world, and you're being able to like sort through these erroneous thoughts that were like instilled in you from society, and you're able to like rid yourself of the erroneous and to be able to perceive the truth of your life and who you truly are. And so I really committed myself like to doing that work on May 7th of 2017.
I love that you say that you committed to doing that work. Like when you decided to receive your own Gohonzon and like really take on this Buddhist practice. You know, we say this many times on the podcast, like it's not like some simple, easy, like snap my fingers while everything's magic, right? But it's this tool that we're doing really difficult work, but like deeply rewarding work. And so when you, you know, decided to become Buddhist, what kind of things were you chanting about? Like, what did you really want to see start to transform in your life?
As I alluded to earlier, I was like really chanting to be able to reclaim my sense of self and reconnect to my identities and my authentic voice and expression. And so I just instantly, you know, started chanting about those things. My determination was to create the spiritual foundation that like with anything that like hits the fan, like I had something that will bounce me back up. And through this practice, when we start chanting, you know, I was told that we're aligning ourselves like with the universe. And so like through this prayer of like finding my voice and being able to use it to inspire and encourage other people, I was asked to share this story for an organization that I was like volunteering for. And they asked me to submit a story like for a lobby day down in Salem. And so like people who were there could like can read the story and be like inspired by it and then take steps towards passing legislation that would address like food insecurities. And so I was just like, great, yes, like I would do that. Then a couple weeks later, the Portland Art Museum reached out to me and was just like, hey, we came across your story in Salem and we have this voice project that we're going to be doing that your voice will be a part of this 6-month like exhibit. And you will also be able to like speak at all these different storytelling like pop-up events. And I was just like, wow, what? And I was like, so nervous, so mind blown. And at first, you know, like I wanted to like, no, like I can't do this. And then I was like thinking about like my prayer and I was just like, this is a manifestation of my prayer. So therefore, I can't say no. Like, I have to do it. And so I said yes. And being in that exhibit, like, I got to work with a professional, like, storyteller. He helped us, like, craft our stories, which was super amazing. And, you know, I shared with them that I was chanting about being able to use my voice to inspire and encourage people. And so they even let me start out this exhibit saying Nammyo Rengekyo. It was, like, super meaningful. And so I got to do that. And then a year later, the storytelling coach or mentor reached out to me and was just like, hey, I started my own storytelling platform. And I really enjoyed working with you for the art museum. And I would love to invite you back to speak at this, like, event that I have coming up. And so I got to, like, work with him, like, with that. And with storytelling, really learning the power of, like, vulnerability and sharing, like, our journeys of triumph. And so in this first experience, like, I just got to talk about my suicide attempt and how that led me to move to Portland and, you know, realizing moving away doesn't change your circumstances and that I needed to, like, find something, you know, concrete, you know, to really be able to help me. And then how I was introduced to Buddhism and Daisaku Ikeda and, like, how I was, like, really using this practice to create meaning out of all the suffering and things that I, like, had been through. And so it was such an amazing opportunity just to stand on a stage in front of, like, 200 people and really share, like, just how this practice has been helping me, even though at that moment it had only been practicing, like, for a year.
What was it like having to write down or speak about your life and your story when you had been struggling to feel, like, a solid sense of who you are?
Yeah, and that's, like, the why this practice is, like, so mystic. And so at that time, I was studying the Buddhist principle, Cherry, Plum, Peach, and Dansum, which Daisaku Ikeda explains that just as cherry, plum, peach, and dansum blossoms all possess their own unique qualities, each person is unique, and we cannot become someone else. The important thing is that we live true to ourselves and cause the great flower of our lives to bloom. And so in that moment, like, I really realized that I was trying to become or be someone else, like, rather than allowing my own authenticity to shine. So when my storytelling coach would reach out to me, he would, like, give me different prompts. And it's like, okay, well, this storytelling event's going to be on pride. I want you to craft a story about what pride means to you. And in that moment, I was just like, well, I don't feel a sense of pride because growing up, like, being gay was only associated with negativity and shame and guilt. So I took it back to the Gohanzon and, like, really started to chant to really be able to embrace my gay identity. And through that process, like, I was able to, like, think about different encounters, like, as a kid that caused me to really, like, close up and disregard myself. And I was able to, like, go back to those moments and, like, to even just, like, to forgive myself as a child for just not understanding, right? And also just to be able to even forgive my parents, because even at that time, like, they didn't know any better either. Like, they were only wishing the best for me based on, like, what they knew at that time. And so it really allowed me to forgive them. And because I've been able to see how my parents have even been able to grow and to learn and to fully be able to accept me. And so I was able just to let go of just, like, these feelings that I've been carrying since I was a kid and was able to, like, let go of these notions that I couldn't be who I authentically am. And during that process, like, I was able to craft the story of me overcoming, you know, these thoughts and, like, in these magical moments or conversations that I had with my parents. And at that time, I started working at the Oregon Food Bank as their equity and inclusion coordinator. And I was organizing our staff to march like in the Pride Parade, which at that time, you know, I was 27 years old. I've never been to a Pride Parade because of that internalized heterosexism. But, you know, I was like just so determined to be able to have this breakthrough with my colleagues, like going to the Pride Parade. And, you know, while I was there, I just like felt this huge, genuine sense of pride and liberation. And I completely cheered and danced myself throughout the whole parade. And I like just further like realized how this philosophy of Buddhism like affirmed me like as a human being. And I, you know, really decided to introduce other folks like to this philosophy that cherishes the dignity and sanctity of life for like for all people and all identities. So even in that moment, like I really awakened to my identity as a bodhisattva, you know, of the earth, who's like fully capable of happiness, like just as I am, you know, with the mission to support others. And so it was just so great, just like how every prompt that I had led me down this process of doing human revolution that then led me to craft these stories that then to be able to share, you know, those breakthroughs with other people. And I've had like so many folks like come up to me and share with me that something that I did or said really like encouraged them. And I remember like being at this table at this conference and there was like a prompt. What is like one determination that you're going to make coming from this conference on, you know, social justice? And mine was, I'm going to further uproot my internalized heterosexism and like and homophobia. And a few months later, like I was at this other conference and this girl, she like came up to me and she was just crying. And I was just like, why is she crying? Like what happened? And she shared, I met you at the last conference and you like shared how you were really, you know, challenging like your own internalized like homophobia and heterosexism. And it made me realize like how I wasn't living true to myself. And I ended up coming out to my partner and my family. And she just threw her arms around me and just gave me a huge hug and just like told me that I would never truly realize how I move through the world is like really encouraging, you know, those around me. And in that moment, you know, I just came back to this practice with so much gratitude because it's been the vehicle that has like really encouraged me to not only undergo my human revolution like for myself, but really doing it for others and really just sharing my breakthroughs like with other people or even what my determinations are. Like I may not even have broken through at that moment, but these are the things that I'm like really challenging in my life. So like to really be able to encourage those around me. So even in that moment, it just made me like realize that everything that I've been encountering in life is to be able to support the people who are like right in front of me. And so I'm so thankful that this philosophy has helped me shift my perspective. I always say like, not just to suffer, but to suffer to be able to create value and meaning and to then be able to like share that with other people. And so this philosophy has really given me that formula to be able to see all of my circumstances through that lens, to keep, you know, empowering me, to keep challenging my circumstances and just to keep sharing with as many people as I possibly can.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, that moment is, I mean, I'm sure it's one of many, like really illustrates your initial determination when you first, you know, started practicing. I just want to like live true to who I am and be able to encourage other people and like support others. And when I'm in kind of like a lower life state, bad mood, I'm like, I don't care about anyone but me. Like, I'm tired of worrying about other people, whatever. But I find that my life feels so much bigger the moment that I can like really support someone else and see like, oh, wow, I'm able to like support others and like bringing joy out of their life. For me personally, like there's no more meaningful way to live my life than to be able to challenge myself to like create meaning from every struggle that I have and then support other people in doing that. Like, it just feels like the world and my life gets so much bigger. One thing I'm curious about, maybe you can like talk through a little bit more, is what does it look like when you would bring one of those prompts to your gohonzon and chant about it? So what did maybe almost like your prayer or like your thoughts look like as you were starting to shift your feelings about like, oh, I don't have anything that I'm prideful about in terms of my identity, to like this moment of pride? What did that internal shift look like?
I think like it really just helped me to be able to see just how precious like my life is, and that I didn't have to like try to be someone that I'm not, that I'm perfect just like the way that I am. And that like just really allowed me to just like fully break free and be like, you know, here in this moment, like I have pride, and I have pride because I survived my attempt. And that was like even like a journey for me, because in 2019, I was nearing the fifth anniversary like of my suicide attempt. You know, I was always overwhelmed like with shame and survivor's like remorse. But through chanting Nammyo Renge Kyo, I finally felt like equipped to address these heavy feelings. And Ikeda, you know, shares that everyone has a mission, and we were born because we have a mission. And that's why we must live our lives and persevere through all. And he, you know, later shares that all life is equally precious, and there's no hierarchy among living beings, and each person has a unique nature, and each person's life is as precious as the universe in its entirety. It is one with the universe and just as important. So reading that, you know, I was really able to start to realize how precious like life is, and how precious other people's lives are, and how precious all living things are, and how precious my life is. And I started to cry, and I was like filled like with this sense of gratitude, you know, to be alive. And I then was able to reflect on all the things that I have accomplished, like, you know, since my attempt. And I graduated from college on time, like I moved to a new city, I found a full-time job within my degree, I was introduced to the SGI, I found my Buddhist mentor, Daisaku Ikeda, and began my human revolution. And so in that moment, I was able to fully embrace myself, and, you know, and I just smiled and patted myself on the back for persevering like through one of the most challenging periods, you know, of my life. And now I regard the anniversary of my suicide attempt as my life celebration. And on this day each year, which is March 13th, I take the day off, you know, to go soaking. I always go to the warm springs, and there I just will sit and reflect and honor, you know, my life, and renew my vow to make causes like for my happiness and the happiness of other people. And so, and for me, it's just like, I want to be able to introduce as many folks as possible, or awaken them to their Buddha nature, their unlimited wisdom, courage, and compassion. And so whatever I can possibly do to prevent them from making that same cost, you know, that I made. And so that they're able to recognize how precious like their life is before they even think or even consider doing the same thing, you know, that I did. And so chanting just like was really that vehicle that like really allowed me to come to all these like realizations.
It's one thing to say like, I don't value my life and I want to value my life, but to actually get to the point of valuing your life is like, whoa, that's wild. But I think your experience is totally showing that, right? Like this continued practice of tapping into your Buddhahood, you can start to see your life differently. You can really cherish your life in a new way. And I think like the key thing for folks to understand is like, as you chant, you're tapping into like this Buddhahood in your life, like you shared, which is characterized by limitless wisdom, courage, and compassion. I'm so moved by your story, and it's quite profound to shift from this feeling of the anniversary being one that kind of brings like dread and shame to something that's now like deep appreciation for your life. I mean, that is really like, that's deep. That's really profound to have that. It's amazing. I think the fifth anniversary you said is like when you really shifted that fundamental attitude. So from that point forward, what did your life look like, or what has your life looked like since then?
Yeah, I've been able to continue to do speaking engagements for different like platforms. I've been able to speak at different school events. Recently, I was chanting around like, how do I like further align my life, like in my strengths and my talents, like with world peace. And so it was like really chanting. And I just like had this realization, it's storytelling. And so I reached out to my story coach, and it like had been at that moment like a couple years since like I've done an event because of COVID. And so I told him that the 10th anniversary of my suicide attempt like was coming up, and I wanted to be able to do something to be able to like share all the things that I've been able to break through and really heal through like with this practice. And so we met up literally like 2 days later, and I was like sharing with him some ideas that I had in mind. And he was just like, well, since you like pitched your ideas, like I want to like pitch this opportunity to you. And he was like, I got this grant for this book that is going to be featuring other folks from the LGBTQ plus community, like sharing their defining moments. And I cannot think of like a better person to be like a part of this process. You know, of course, like I had that like perceived limitation like come through my mind. I was just like, I am not a writer. Just like, I am a verbal storyteller. I felt confident in that, but writing, no. And that was like another opportunity like for me to challenge that perceived limitation, you know, in my life. And so I was just like, yes. And I would chant about this. And within a week, I was able to get a 10-page draft done. And I was just like, who am I? And I was like starting to like realize that like, yeah, this is like a hidden gift that I have that I didn't like recognize. And to be able to really share like, you know, how much like I've been able to transform within the last like 10 years and how it truly did, you know, become a defining moment for me. Because like I would not be who I am today, like if it wasn't for me having gone through that journey. Like I would have never moved to Portland. I would have never started seeking a spiritual like practice. So I never would have been introduced to the SGI and started chanting. And so I'm just so thankful like for this community and this practice and to be able to share these incredible experiences that I've had, and to be able to do it like through a book, like something that I never would have ever imagined myself doing. And so, yeah, so I'm like, got to celebrate the 10th anniversary of my life celebration this last month. And the book came out like the day before. It was so incredible. And so it just like takes me this like back like to the beginning of my practice of chanting, to be able to accept myself in my voice, and how now it is like completely manifested into me being a storyteller and being able to share these journeys and experiences with as many people as I possibly can. And now I'm the manager of equity and work culture. I have the opportunity to help onboard new employees. And so that really led me to do this orientation that like really allows us to be able to start to really get to know each other like on a fundamental level. And that's something that I learned like through this Buddhism, is like really connecting like heart to heart with people. And given that like my identities were something that I really grappled with, and through this practice have, you know, come to realize the power of being like who we are, you know, has allowed me to open it up by us sharing how we want to be seen, you know, in the world, and like, and how we can, you know, extend respect like to one another. And in that, I also share with them very intentionally if folks are experiencing like a mental health crisis, that they know that there's like someone within our organization that they can like reach out to, just to be able to affirm and validate like whatever they're going through in that moment, and then to be able to direct them, you know, to a mental health professional or anyone who can like really support them during that time. And so I'm, you know, just thankful just for how that this community has like modeled, you know, that to me, that I'm able to then to extend that to those like in my environment.
Has it felt easy to create those spaces, or was it hard at first, or you just felt like, oh yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to create this space. Done.
Yeah, it was exactly that. Like, I'm just going to create this space, and everyone always responds back with the same level of like authenticity and vulnerability. And then I'm also always able to tell, you know, within that, like, one of the primary lens that I like see the world through is my Buddhist practice. And so it allows me to be able to like share with them like my practice and how like I've been able to, you know, transform my life. Like, it's a way that I'm able to just to extend myself. And so everything that I've experienced in life has like really helped humanize like my experience to be able to support other people and to be able to use those experiences to generate like potential solutions or to create a more inclusive work environment and communities.
I mean, now with this being like the 10-year anniversary, reflecting back on those 10 years, which I'm sure you've been doing a lot of lately, do you have any piece of advice for someone who is similarly struggling to really like accept themselves and live authentically?
You know, I just really encourage, you know, folks to try chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo and applying a Buddhist like concept to your circumstances, like to your situation. And through that, I guarantee, you know, you will start to realize like just how precious, you know, your life is. And you'll be able to have like the tool of chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo like from your home. Being able to start cultivating that relationship with yourself. That was something that was like so foreign to me, but I can be able to sit in the comfort of my home, have that inner dialogue. And so I just really, you know, encourage folks to start cultivating that relationship with yourself, like start to get in tune with your inner workings. And so that you can start identifying like, what are those misconceptions like about yourself that you've been holding on to? All the things that are just preventing you from like living true to yourself, and like just start casting yourself of it and just be like, no, that's not me. That's not me. That's not me. Yes, this is me. This is me. This is me. And just go through that beautiful journey. And it's not, you know, easy, but after each breakthrough, you just feel lighter. And even just more joyful. And through each breakthrough, you start to really cultivate faith. And faith in Nichiren and Buddhism is like faith in one's ability. And this Buddhism like really creates the conditions that just allow us to undergo this journey while like having a great mentor in life that is encouraging you and believing in you. And just like all the people would just like completely rally, you know, around you. Like, through the hardest of times, and then they will rejoice with you in the happiest of times. And you just get to like really solidify like yourself through the care and support that you receive, like as like you're challenging these circumstances. Also, you know, just don't be afraid to like to challenge, you know, your circumstances head on. Only through like challenging like our circumstances can we come to understand like what's important to us. And it helps us like empathize with other people's suffering. And each problem that we overcome through Buddhist faith and practice, like we're able to become a model to society of like how we can overcome, you know, these circumstances and to be able to experience like so much joy.
speaking with Joshua reminded me of the power of treasuring your life, which is something that I think many of us have struggled with. In college, I read an essay by Daisaku Ikeda titled, Lead a Youth of Unsurpassed Joy. In it, he encourages young people to live creatively and joyfully and outlines some key points. And I want to share one point in particular that really struck me. Nothing could be more misguided than comparing yourself unfavorably with others and then losing your confidence and devaluing yourself, when you in fact possess the infinitely respect-worthy Buddha nature. Chant Nam-myoho-renge-kyo vibrantly in the place where you are now and shine as an entity of the mystic law just as you are. Press ahead freely and confidently, unafraid of failure. Your courageous steps forward will open new paths to a culture of peace where the beautiful diversity of all humanity can come to full bloom in accord with the Buddhist principle of cherry, plum, peach, and damson blossoms. And I feel like Joshua's experience really kind of illustrates that. Being able to really embrace yourself, take these courageous steps forward, and embrace the beautiful diversity in all of humanity. He went from a person who thought he needed to rid himself of things that society had said were maybe less than, into someone who cherishes and embraces all aspects of who he is, and he's determined to help other people do the same thing. If you've been listening for a while and you're curious about how to get connected to a BuddhaBility community near you, you can just reach out to us at connect@buddhability.org. And for next week's episode, we want to know what was or is your biggest fear about life after high school. Until next time, thanks for listening.